Not too long ago, this being still February, they came out with a list of those people that they consider the most influential people in the world. I always get a kick out of looking at those lists and some of the names of the people that are on there, some I never heard of. The top four weren't even from this country, and people I had never, you know, one of the guys I had heard of, but you guys ever hear of a South Korean pop star by the name of Rain? You know him? I don't know. I never heard of him. He's like mega star, and I never heard of him, but I said he's breaking in over here. He just had a tour over here. So every year around January, we're hit with all kinds of lists, the lists of the best of whatever category you can think of. If you have a favorite hobby, I'm sure there's a magazine out there somewhere devoted to your hobby, to your interest. And whatever it is that you enjoy doing, whatever your interest is, I'm sure that if you find that magazine, either at the end of the year or the beginning of the year, you're going to find a list of the best of that thing. The best ways to do it, the best places to go, the best, you know, whatever. Something about the best. So I'm going to give you just a few names on the list of the most influential people. And this is, some of these are in the millions, many of them are in the hundreds of thousands. The first one had over 600-some thousand votes, and that's Lady Gaga. Isn't that wonderful? Conan O'Brien, Hillary Clinton, Elton John. I'm doing these in order. There's other names, a few other names I skipped because I didn't know who they were. I'm giving you the ones that I did know. Beyonce, Nancy Pelosi, Betty White, Prince, Tiger Woods, Snooki, however you say it, Muammar Gaddafi, and Alec Baldwin. Now, you know, I look at these names, when I look at the names of people like this, and these are supposed to be some of the most influential people in the world, I mean, it really makes me wonder about our world. I'm not positive, but I don't think there was a Christian on that list. And so I wonder, are these the kind of people that we really want to influence our culture? Are these the kind of people we want to influence our kids? To help raise them, to help us raise them? By the songs they sing, by the things that they do, by the articles they may write or the stories about them? I don't think so. If I had to choose those I would trust to put on a list of the most influential, you know what? I would pick a lot of people right here in this church. Because I would much rather have you guys influencing my world and my kids and my friends and family and my community than those people. The truth is everyone sitting in this room today, every one of you, has the power and the ability to influence the lives, influence the thinking, influence the direction of all kinds of people. Over the past few weeks, we've been talking about being a light to the world, and being a witness, being a testimony of God's love, His mercy, His glory. Almost every day, you are going to find yourself in a certain place, or a certain time, or a certain situation, a certain position, where you can influence people. Where you can influence them in a number of ways. Acts 17:26 says, "From one man he made every nation of men, that they should inhabit the whole earth, and he determined the time set for them and the exact places where they should live." You were born into this time for a purpose, by the plan of God. Your timing wasn't an accident, although your parents may think so. But God knew when you were coming. You were called to live in a certain place because of the plan of God. You can't believe you ended up here, you ended up there. But you know what? Behind the scenes, there's somebody more powerful than us that's working all things out. You were called to be a part of a certain body of believers. And here you are today. You were created for such a time as this. To be in certain places at certain times so you can influence the outcome of particular situations for the glory of God. What I want to do today, and what I'm going to do right now, is read a story of a certain person who was used by God to change the course of history, especially for the Jews. She didn't want to do it. She had no intention, no desire to do it. She didn't think she could do it. But she submitted herself to God's plan to, and we see one of the greatest stings in history. Ever see that movie, The Sting? Or you know what a sting is? It's when someone thinks they're going to try to pull a con on you or a fast one on you, but you turn it around and you make this big operation and you end up turning the tables on them and causing them to be the one that loses. And in this case, in this particular sting, it's probably one of the biggest stings of all time. In fact, I'm sure it is, if not the biggest. Our story begins with a king by the name of Xerxes, a powerful, wealthy king, and he's throwing this banquet. And it says it lasts for 6 months, 180 days. He's got all these big shots around from all over the kingdom. They're all coming in. I imagine, you know, it takes a while for some of these guys to get in there. He had said it was from India to Kush. He was from India all the way up to Africa. I mean, he had a huge kingdom, the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians. And so obviously cost was no consideration. This guy had couches made of gold and silver and chairs, and he was given, in the second part of the banquet, after the 6 months, he had another banquet for the people in his own kingdom. And he had what's called a citadel, and it's the stronghold, or like a fort inside of a city, where if people attacked you, everybody would go into there, or this where you would store your money or your arms or something like that. And he had everybody that lived in his town come in. All the people, from rich or poor, everybody came in, and they could have all they wanted to drink, and they were drinking out of gold and silver goblets. This king was wealthy. He was a big deal. And so he's there at this banquet, and he's in, you know, really high spirits, and he decides that his wife is so beautiful, he wants to show her off. Well, do you guys sometimes feel like that, you know, don't you? I hope. You know, you want to have your wife on your arm and you want to show her off because she's pretty and you love her and, you know, you're proud of her, you know. So, he's a little high, you know. So he tells one of his servants to go get his wife. He says, bring her in. I want to show off her beauty to all the people because she is so beautiful. Well, she must have been having a bad day because she refused to come. She told the king, I'm not coming. And word got out, and all these nobles, you know, were with him and stuff like that, and the king's going, what am I going to do? And his advisors told him, well, if you don't deal with this, every household in your nation is going to be in uproar and the whole kingdom's going to fall apart, basically. So she got canned. She was kicked out as queen, and a new decree was issued. It was sent out to the whole kingdom that the king was now looking for a new queen. So all these women from all over the kingdom, all the young virgins, were all being brought in to be paraded before this king to see who would be the lucky new queen. And that's where we enter the story, and it's in the book of Esther. And I'm going to be reading from Esther now, starting in chapter 2. Verse 5, I'm going to go through quite a way. It's going to be the bulk of my message is going to be actual scripture today because this story is just an amazing story. I love this story. You may have heard it, maybe you haven't. But it is a wonderful story, and I'm telling you, when you hear how it all turns out, I want you to remember what I said, that this is the biggest sting of all time. And you're going to see how this one woman was so influential that she, as I said earlier, change the course of history. So here we are in Esther chapter 2. Now there was in the citadel of Susa a Jew of the tribe of Benjamin named Mordecai, son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, who had been carried into exile from Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, among those taken captive with Jehoiakim, the king of Judah. Mordecai had a cousin named Hadassah, whom he had brought up because she had neither father nor mother. Actually, they think she was his niece. The girl, who was also known as Esther, was lovely in form and features, and Mordecai had taken her as his own daughter when her father and mother died. When the king's order and edict had been proclaimed, many girls were brought to the citadel of Susa and put under the care of Haggai. Esther was also taken to the king's palace and entrusted to Haggai, who had charge of the harem. The girl pleased him and won his favor. She was, you know, she just was a sweet, nice, pleasant, beautiful, willing young girl who just, you know, wanted to do right. She just was a good, nice person. And so she pleased him and won his favor. Immediately he provided her with her beauty treatments and special food. For months they got to go, you know, like sometimes you enjoy sitting in a, you know, sitting in the tub with, you know, oils, beauty oils, or putting on the different lotions and stuff. This girl had the finest oils, the finest treatments, all kinds of handmaidens to pamper her for months to make her something special. He assigned to her 7 maids. Would you like to have 7 maids around your house? Wouldn't that be nice? I bet everybody would like that. He assigned to her 7 maids selected from the king's palace and moved her and her maids into the best place in the harem. Esther had not revealed her nationality and her family background because Mordecai had forbidden her to do so. He was a smart guy, this Mordecai. Every day he walked back and forth near the courtyard of the harem to find out how Esther was and what was happening to her. He kept his ear to the ground, always wanting to know what was going on with Esther and also what was going on in the kingdom. Before a girl's turn came to go into King Xerxes, she had to complete, it was 12 months of beauty treatments. 12 months of beauty treatments prescribed for the women. 6 months with oil of myrrh, and then 6 months with perfumes and cosmetics. That's a long time to learn how to get pretty, isn't it? And just, you know, to have your oils put in your body and just to feel special. And this is how she would go to the king. Anything she wanted was given her to take with her from the harem to the king's palace. In the evening, she would go there and in the morning return to another part of the harem to the care of Shazgaz. Hey, Shazgaz, how'd you like to have a name like that? Shazgaz, the king's eunuch, who was in charge of the concubines. She would not return to the king unless he was pleased with her and summoned her by name. When the term came for Esther, the king, the girl Mordecai had adopted, the daughter of his uncle, Abihail, to go to the king, she asked for nothing other than what Haggai, that was the chief servant there of the girls, the king's eunuch who was in charge of the harem, suggested. See, she was such a willing, pleasing, wanting to please kind of girl that, you know, just whatever you think, you know, I mean, if you think this is what I should take, I'll take this. I trust you. You know, everybody else probably think, no, I want to take this. I'm gonna show off like that. But no, she was just this nice, simple, young, just personable, friendly kind of girl. I would keep that in mind. So Esther won the favor of everyone around her. She was taken to King Xerxes in the royal residence in the 10th month, the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. Now the king was attracted to Esther more than to any of the other women. And she won his favor and approval more than any of the other virgins. So he set a royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. So Esther now has become the queen, and he doesn't even know that she's a Jew. And he has no idea that Uncle Mordecai is hanging out in the courtyard, always watching out for her, and this guy's a smart guy. So the king gave this great banquet, Esther's banquet, for all his nobles and officials. He proclaimed a holiday throughout the provinces and distributed gifts with royal liberality. When the virgins were assembled a second time, Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate. But Esther had kept secret her family background and nationality, just as Mordecai had told her to do. For she continued to follow Mordecai's instructions, as she had done when he was bringing her up. During the time Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's officers who guarded the doorway, became angry and conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. All these things are going to come into play. Everything, you know, like when you go see a movie, this happens and that happens, and you say, how is all this related? And then at the end, they all come together. That's what's going to happen here. So these two guys were angry and conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. But Mordecai found out about the plot and told Queen Esther, who in turn reported it to the king, giving credit to Mordecai. And when the report was investigated and found to be true, the two officials were hanged on the gallows. All this was recorded in the book of the annals in the presence of the king. After these events, King Xerxes honored Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, elevating him and giving him a seat of honor higher than that of all the other nobles. For some reason, he chose this guy, Haman. Haman was the kind of guy who always pushed himself out there, put himself in front of the king, tried to make himself look good, always trying to work behind the scenes to promote himself. All the royal officials at the king's gate knelt down and paid honor to Haman, for the king had commanded this concerning him. But Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor, because Mordecai only honored God. Then the royal officials at the king's gate asked Mordecai, why do you disobey the king's command? They were probably sort of friendly with him by now if he was out there every day. Day after day, they spoke to him. Come on, Mordecai. You got to just kneel. Kneel for this guy. You're going to get in trouble. Therefore, they told Haman about it to see whether Mordecai's behavior would be tolerated, for he had told them he was a Jew. See, now they know he's a Jew. When Haman saw that Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor, he was enraged. Yet having learned who Mordecai's people were, he scorned the idea of killing only Mordecai. He didn't just want to kill Mordecai. He hated Jews. Instead, Haman looked for a way to destroy all of Mordecai's people, the Jews. Happens all the time, because they're God's people, throughout the whole kingdom of Xerxes. In the 12th year of King Xerxes, in the first month, the month of Nisan, that must be where those cars first came from, they cast the poor, that is the lot, in the presence of Haman to select a day and a month. So they threw dice, or, you know, they cast these lots to come up with a day to come against the Jews. The lot fell on the 12th month, the month of Adar. Then Haman said to King Xerxes, there is a certain people dispersed and scattered among the peoples in all the provinces of your kingdom whose customs are different from those of all other people and who do not obey the king's laws. It is not in the king's best interest to tolerate them. So he's making up these stories. All these people are out there. They won't listen to you. They won't do it. They're bad people. This is not good for you, king. You better get rid of them, and I'm the perfect guy to take care of them. So he says, if it pleases the king, let a decree be issued to destroy them, and I'll put 10,000 talents. I'll pay for it. He's a rich guy, and he says, I'll pay to have them killed. I will put 10,000 talents of silver into the royal treasury for the men who carry out this business. So the king took his signet ring from his finger and gave it to Haman, son of Hammedatha the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews. Now he's known as the enemy of the Jews. Keep the money, the king said. I got plenty. and do with the people as you please. He didn't investigate it. He didn't check it out. He just listened to this guy. And remember, he doesn't know that his wife, the queen, is one of these Jews. Then on the 13th day of the first month, the royal secretaries are summoned. They wrote out in the script of each province and in the language of each people all Haman's orders to the king's satraps, the governors of the various provinces, and the nobles of the various peoples. These were written in the name of King Xerxes himself and sealed with his own ring. Dispatches were sent by couriers to all the king's provinces with the order to destroy, kill, and annihilate all the Jews, young and old, women and little children, on a single day, the 13th day of the 12th month of Adar, and to plunder their goods. Genocide, that's what we're talking about. Destroy a whole race on one day. Plan it out, take the time, get ready, get into this place. On this one particular day, you're going to kill them all. All the way across, we're looking at continents. We're not just talking about towns here. We're talking about countries and continents. This guy was a big king. A copy of the text of the edict was to be issued as law in every province and made known to the people of every nationality so they would be ready for that day. A worldwide slaughter of the Jews. Spurred on by the king's command, the couriers went out and the edict was issued in the citadel of Susa. The king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city of Susa was bewildered. When Mordecai learned of all that had been done, he tore off his clothes. He put on sackcloth and ashes and went out into the city, wailing loudly and bitterly, but he went only as far as the king's gate, because no one clothed in sackcloth was allowed to enter it. In every province to which the edict and the order of the king came, there was great mourning. Wherever they posted that law, they would post these things on doorways, on public buildings, and, you know, big things, and they would do the old, like, trumpets, or people would proclaim it, and then they would tack it on so everybody would know. And the news would spread fast once it came into the city. So every city where that happened, there was great mourning among the Jews, and fasting and weeping and wailing, and they were laying in sackcloth and ashes. They were asking God to save them somehow. So when Esther's maids and eunuchs came and told her about Mordecai, that he was out there himself in sackcloth and ashes, she sent clothes to him to put on instead of his sackcloth, but he wouldn't accept them. I'm not going to put on new clothes. I'm not going to clean up just because you send me new clothes. Then Esther summoned Hathach, one of the king's eunuchs assigned to attend her, and ordered him to find out what was troubling Mordecai and why. What's the matter, Uncle? What's going on? So Hathach went out to Mordecai in the open square in the city in front of the king's gate. Mordecai told him everything that had happened to him, including the exact amount of money Haman had promised to pay into the royal treasury for the destruction of the Jews. See, Mordecai found out everything. Like I said, he was no dummy. He had his ear to the ground. He heard everything that was going on. He also gave him a copy of the text for the edict of the annihilation of the Jews, which had been published in Susa, to show to Esther and explain it to her. And he told him to urge her to go into the king's presence and to beg for mercy and plead with him for their people. Tell Esther, she's got to tell the king. She's got to talk to the king. These are your people. Tell her, she has to do it. So Hathach went back and reported to Esther what Mordecai had said. Then she told him, now go back and tell this to Mordecai. All the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law, that he be put to death. The only exception to this is for the king to extend his golden scepter to him and then spare his life. But 30 days have passed since I was called to go see the king. That's been a long time since I've seen him. I just can't walk in there. I can't barge in there. The law says I would be put to death. The last time somebody messed up, she got kicked out. She's a little scared. when Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back this answer. Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. Wow. And who knows, and this is a key phrase right here, but who knows but that you have come to a royal position for such a time as this. And we were talking about God puts you in certain places, certain times, all those kind of things. This is what this story is about here. So then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai. Go gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maids will fast also as you do. When this is done, I'll go see the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish. You know, that reminds me of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you know. When they were getting ready to go in that furnace, they said, our God is able to save us. But even if he doesn't, we won't bow down to your king. So she says, all right, I'll go. I might die. If I perish, I perish. But I'll go try. So Mordecai went away and carried out all of Esther's instructions. On the third day, Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the palace in front of the king's hall. She gets all dressed up, gets herself looking real pretty and just sort of, I wonder if the king will notice me. She starts walking around and the king says, oh, there's Esther. You know, he's sitting on his royal throne in the hall facing the entrance. He sees her right outside there. When he saw Queen Esther standing in the court, he was pleased with her. And so he held out the gold scepter, which was in his hand. And so Esther approached and touched the tip of the scepter. That was the formality you had to do. Then the king asked, what is it, Queen Esther? What's your request? He must have really cared for her because this was not done. Even up to half the kingdom will be given to you. If it pleases the king, replied Esther, let the king, together with Haman, now remember Haman is the guy who made this new law. This is the sting. We're setting up the sting now. It's all starting. If it pleases the king, replied Esther, let the king, together with Haman, come today to a banquet I have prepared for him. Bring Haman at once, the king said, so that we may do what Esther asks. Sounds pretty good. Let's have a nice little banquet. So the king and Haman went to the banquet Esther had prepared. As they were drinking wine, the king again asked Esther, now what is your petition? It will be given to you. And what is your request? Even up to half the kingdom. And it's yours. It will be granted. Esther replied, my petition and my request is this. If the king regards me with favor, and if it pleases the king to grant my petition and fulfill my request, let the king and Haman come tomorrow to the banquet I will prepare for them, another banquet. Then I will answer the king's question. So Haman went out that day, and he was happy. Man, I get to go to a banquet with the queen and the king. And he's in high spirits. And when he saw Mordecai at the king's gate and observed that he neither rose or showed fear in his presence, oh man, he was ready to kill. He was filled with rage against Mordecai. But nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and went home. He knew his day was coming when he was going to be able to kill all the Jews. Calling together his friends and Zeresh, his wife, Haman boasted to them about his vast wealth, his many sons, and all the ways the king had honored him and how he had elevated him above all the other nobles and officials. And that's not all, Haman added. I'm the only person Queen Esther invited to accompany the king to this banquet. Man, he doesn't know what's coming.